Welcome to Cybersecurity Insights, the podcast for the cybered.io learning community. Our goal is to bring cybersecurity practitioners the latest and most relevant education and training to upskill and dive deeper into topics that matter in today's modern cybersecurity world.
Good day, everyone. This is Steve King. I'm the managing director at cybered.io. And on today's podcast, we're here with Tom Korn, who's the chief product officer for Ontinu. Tom is in that role, oversees product management, product marketing, engineering, and security operations, and also advisory and technical account management. Tom's been around for a while. He was chief product officer at Open Systems prior to Ontinu, and he's also led security product teams at market leaders like VMware and RSA, joined Open Systems in the summer of 2021 after serving as a senior vice president at VMware's security business unit. Tom holds an MBA from Harvard and a BS in electrical and computer engineering from the University of Waterloo. So welcome, Tom. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks so much. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Let's surprise everybody and talk about AI. and it's going so fast that as a product manager, I can only imagine what your day is filled up with. But you've been thinking about this stuff for a long time, I'm sure. Maybe we can open up by talking about some of your exploratory thinking paths around your product and the intersection of AI.
Sure. As you said, Steve, we've been thinking about this for a while. A lot of what consumes us is really how do you operationalize security? Ontinu, of course, is a managed detection and response service. So it's really all about how do you operationalize security in service of protecting an organization. And, as you think about that, it's really about how we detect, how we triage, how we investigate, how we respond, how we assess where there's risk, how do we prevent, and how do you do that fast, at speed, at scale, consistently? And, that raises a whole host of challenges that candidly has been the biggest challenges in security, I think, over recently has really been that. How do you operationalize it? There is tremendous opportunity for AI in solving some of those problems. Traditionally, AI has really served two needs, I think, in our industry. One has been marketing hype. And the other has been, big progress has been made over the last couple of years in detection. And so the product companies, folks like Microsoft and CrowdStrike and others have done a lot in terms of AI, in terms of improving how we detect. But there is so much more opportunity for AI, and that's what sparked a lot of our thinking. We actually started our business by buying an AI company that was a group of data scientists. So we had an opportunity to really think through this with a group that was really ingrained on it. But there's a whole host of things. As an example, understanding your environment better. Well, that might sound like, well, why is that a security issue? We have to think about how we're going to prioritize security issues as they come in. You want to think about as we need to take action and respond to a security threat, well, kind of what's allowed and what makes sense given what that asset is and what the dependencies are, or if I have to, which of those assets are more critical, or who do I need to connect to get either permission or additional context when taking action? That whole understanding of operational constraints in the environment model, there is tremendous opportunity for AI there. Another example is in the area of automation. We've really tried to move to more of a tierless SOC model where we're really not employing tier one SOC analysts. We're really employing tier three SOC analysts. If you're going to do that, you really need to automate away a lot of what tier one and even some of what tier two traditionally did. Now, there's always been technologies like SOAR to say, give me the instructions of what, you know, this is what you want done. I'll execute that. And that's fine for your five basic use cases. But automation has a long tail problem where there are very quickly lots of nuanced things and paths you can take in doing triage and investigation. AI has an enormous potential in solving some of those problems. And I'll give you one last example, Steve, which is so much of security is making fast decisions. And in support of those decisions, people need answers to questions. And traditionally, we built all kinds of dashboards and reports, which are useful for very common things. But very often, in the heat of the moment where I need a very specific question answered, I don't quite have the report or dashboard that answers that. We're starting to see with things like large language models, AI can play a tremendous role in being able to just ask me the question that you want, and I'll get together the information and present it in a way that's consumable. Those are all tremendous examples of how AI can really move the needle in terms of improving the operations of security. And those are all in areas that we have explored and built out.
Yeah, and how much of that is integrated with your product now?
Well, a tremendous amount. Just to give you some examples of where we've used AI, one example is in solving some of the problems of discerning between benign positives and true positives. So today, a lot of the products like Microsoft Defender do a tremendous job at eliminating kind of false positive alerts through a whole bunch of things, including AI. The challenge of benign versus true positives is what kills a lot of security operations teams, because someone's benign is someone else's true, and someone's true is someone else's benign. It actually depends on your environment and what controls you have in place and how that particular thing affects you. So that's one of the areas that we've employed AI to discern between those. And to do so responsibly meant finding a way to not just come up with the answer, but to have the system be transparent and being able to explain how it came up with the answer so that a human could then look at that and see if that actually made sense and have a human in the loop. But that's an area that we have operationalized, and it has actually helped us tremendously in terms of speed and efficiency of really dealing with alerts and investigations. Another example, very completely different area, is in the area of chatbots. So we actually built our whole interface inside Microsoft Teams. Our service really caters to companies who are leveraging Microsoft, in addition to other controls, but are leveraging Microsoft. So a lot of our customers are using Microsoft Teams. So we built our interface actually in Teams. We actually show up as a team, and you can chat directly with our security analysts, as well as our SOC engineers, et cetera. And so the use of chat to connect directly with our people, but also directly with our AI, and just ask questions. And so what we built is a system that intercepts those chats. We're actually leveraging, in our case, Azure GPT, along with our own security models, to be able to ask very in-depth, very specific questions, security questions, that go access their data and actually just natural language and produce the results, so that more of the dashboards and reports are just ask us the question in English and we'll just produce it on the fly. And we've done it in a manner that's doesn't send our customers' data to Azure GPT to tune that. So when you're solving some of these problems, you have to consider not just how you solve the problem, but also how you do so responsibly. So governance is part of that. But so chat is a good example of an area where we've applied AI. Another area where we've applied AI is In when a customer is seeing alerts, transparency into what happened in the investigation, how we reached those conclusions, what's the full chain of the investigation is very important, both to establish trust that everyone's on the same page, but for a lot of other practical reasons. And we are leveraging AI to, in real time, constantly be tracking what's the analyst doing, what's the automation doing, what are the artifacts, and to just pull together tickets and incidents that are extremely well written, extremely consistent, concise, and just lay out for the consumer. This is really what's going on. We've applied AI into learning from our analysts, our expert analysts, and constantly feeding our automation engines so that more and more things can just be done in a very, very fast and automated manner, and that things pop up when they need a tier three analyst to really dig in. So it's constantly learning from our analysts. There's a whole variety of places that we've been using it. We really try to take almost an AI first approach to looking at our business and our operations.
Yeah, I get that. Are you intentionally keeping the human element into this equation? I ask that because it kind of sounds like it based on what you just said. You know, for example, do we need a level three SOC analyst? Why can't that be a version of an AI bot, for example, who does that analysis and produces that result? I ask that because, to your point, you know, speed is everything here, and I wonder about how. I mean, the bad guys are certainly going to rely entirely, I'm pretty sure, on AI and not have much human element in their processes. So we kind of have to match that, don't we?
We do. Human in the loop, which is a sort of a principle that we talk a great deal about here. There's really two questions there, Steve. I think one of them is there are certain parts of the problem, a certain class of problems that are not yet automatable. And so AI and automation in general is really about augmenting the analyst's intelligence, giving them access to some of the analysis so that they can really dive into the things that aren't yet capable for machines to really produce. And that's why we're a tier two, tier three analyst can really shine on those types of things. Human in the loop is also part of a solution to another problem, which is there needs to be a feedback loop for quality on the kinds of responses that you're getting AI. So, you know, AI is not perfect, depending on kind of things that you're using. For example, large language models still have some issues around hallucinations, etc. And we have found for that problem in particular, there are two things that really improve the problem. One is providing the model with a lot of detailed information about the environment itself, as opposed to just generically asking questions. And that actually helps reduce hallucinations tremendously. The other is the human in the loop. There are certain types of things for which you really do want experts at the end of that cycle to say, all right, you've reached this conclusion. I want to take a look and see if I reach the same conclusion. To do that, you need experts who are going to take a look at it. And it also, you need transparency in the way that your AI solutions operate, that they don't just come up with an answer as a black box, but they can say succinctly, this is the evidence that I looked at, this is the logic that I came up with, and this is the answer. And that provides not only a quality check before taking an action, it also provides a feedback loop to the system to constantly improve. And so in terms of the automation, and to your question, Steve, about, you know, why can't we just automate absolutely everything? I think, again, there's a class of things for which the system's consistency and quality can really handle it fully from automation, in which case, fantastic. Then it's all about speed. We can get it done quickly. We limit the blast radius. We limit the amount of operational burden on everybody, including, you know, our customer security and IT teams, fantastic. And then there is a class of problems for which automation and AI can't yet solve a problem fully. Well, how far can we take it so that we can give them the intelligence and the artifacts to make them smarter and faster? So they're not doing a lot of just repetitive, work. That's not only slows them down, it's also the kind of thing, tedious type of work that ends up causing mistakes and errors by humans. Does that answer your question, Steve? Did it?
Yeah. But don't you think that within a few months, the technology, the LLMs and the technology will have evolved to the extent that automating all of this would be possible? For example, if I went to school entirely upon the results from a human version of a level 4 SOC analyst, level 3 SOC analyst, for example, I would learn a lot about both the environment, language model, about the environment and about the decisions and the decision process that the level 3 analyst went through. Can you not see a time when, in the imminent future, when we can replace that person with an AI bot?
So, first of all, it is moving incredibly quickly. I mean, it is incredible that we could be talking about things in matters of months, and I've never seen things move so quickly.
Right.
I think it is to understand, though, that first of all, AI, even the AI that we're discussing now, is a larger conversation than just large language models, right? When we, the AI models that we have built and that we leverage are a mix of LLMs. We've used, for some types, class problems, semi-supervised learning. For some type class of problems, things like boosted trees or GNCs, there's a whole variety of tools that we have used for different parts of problem. AI is a broad field. It's not just purely large language models. There's no question that generative AI has enormous potential. And candidly, I think we're all still getting our arms around how expansive that could be. We started working recently with using LLMs to actually, just as you point out, see, watching our security experts not only solving problems, but explaining their logic of why they're deciding to do something and having the system incorporate that in building sort of new, more intelligent automations, right? Because traditionally, you've thought of training AI by giving it thousands and thousands of examples of sort of very similar same things in order to train it to do automations or have a skill. The problem with that for some of the security use cases that we deal with is really this question I mentioned earlier of the long tail problem, which is I don't have thousands and thousands of examples of that. That happens rarely, but I need to be able to handle that. Again, I think there's tremendous potential with large language models to solve just that. But it does involve training them not just with, watching the steps of the analyst, but also having them also annotate the rationale. All this to say, Steve, this is moving fast. I don't know that we're imminently getting rid of all humans out of this process, no matter what kind of security. In general, our view is that having a team of highly skilled tier 3 analysts is important, not only for certain classes of problems that still need a human in the loop to kind of finish some of that investigation. Clearly, that becomes a more confined problem, but also to continue to tune and train the models themselves. That becomes very, very important. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. And as you pointed out earlier, I mean, discriminative AI has been around, I don't know, 15 years, I mean, or so, and that's how we've all done detection. That's how all of the threat detection companies have made their product work based upon that particular form of AI. And so I'm curious, I guess, I look at the Microsoft OpenAI agreement, and it's curious to me that OpenAI is always, you know, a week away from AGI rather, and which of course accommodates Microsoft's need to be able to capitalize on that product during that period of time before it becomes in the public domain, as it were, or available generally publicly. How do you feel about that? You think Microsoft is part of the solution or part of the problem here?
No, I think actually they've done some tremendous work here, and they are really, I think, pushing the boundaries on a lot of this stuff. I think the challenge generally when something so exciting occurs is discerning between what is real and mature today versus what is potentially possible or what is eminently or where that sits sometimes is a little difficult to discern. We have found, for example, Microsoft has been kind enough to include us in their design partner team on Security Copilot, for example. And so we've had a chance to use it. We found it sort of tremendously useful right now in the areas of threat hunting and some of the areas of investigation. I don't think that technology alone fully solves the problem of, you know, automating and operationalizing, you know, detection, investigation, and response, right? I think there is a larger set of things that actually have to go into that. Nonetheless, it is moving incredibly fast. And so I think organizations really do have to start getting smarter about and using and start applying these tools. I think as they do, I think they have a few things they should consider. One is that you really have to start thinking about your data, in this case, your security data and telemetry, as almost a product. How do you govern that product? How do you secure that product? And as an example, our use of Azure GPT, we need to tune that so that it gives very, very specific answers, not only leveraging its knowledge of the space, but also the environment that the customer is operating in, the security telemetry that we have from a variety of sources, not just Microsoft, the customer's operational constraints, etc. How do you do that without being in a mode where you have to train it by handing that data over to Microsoft's model? That's not something that you want to do. Our customers, many of our customers would have great concerns about that. So we've put in place a governance model for how you handle that. Where does that data go, right? Instead of just sort of, adding to a common training model, we are taking that data and we're using a mixture of sequencing with some of our own AI models and prompt engineering for Azure GPT so that that information is stateless. We're not just handing that customer's security telemetry over to the model. It's an example of governance of that. You know, if you're, you know, putting your information that you're leveraging for your AI models into a data lake and more now, like in our case, a data mesh, how do you govern that data? How do you protect that data? Who has access to that data? You really need to think about that data very carefully and how you use these models. That becomes more important. So we have sort of sketched out a series of principles like that. The data governance model, transparency in AI decisions so that they can actually be checked. Where do you put human in the loop? For what kind of decisions you want the AI to just respond, and what kind of decisions do you want a human in the loop? What's the QA and the quality approval of these sort of AI decisions? All of these things, I think, should be thought through for your AI program. But I think one thing that is imperative, organizations really do need to be embracing this. As you point out, Steve, this is moving very fast, faster than I've ever seen any technology move. And it's important for organizations not only to take advantage of it, because this is an arms race. Our adversaries are using this too. But it also takes time for an organization to really learn how to embrace and operationalize this stuff. I'll give you a good example on that, Steve. Even the chatbot that we produced, and we've been, every few weeks, we've been adding skills to our chatbot. It can answer questions about the customer's incidents. It can answer questions about their data costs for security. It can answer and make recommendations. It takes a while for the customers to get used to that chatbot. They almost have to play with it for a while before they go, oh, every time I'm doing this, I should be going to that. There's a behavioral change that it almost takes to learn how to embrace it. And organizations, I think, have to think, whether they're using someone like this or whether they're implementing it themselves, I think they really do need to embrace this and move. This is going to move very quickly. There's a tremendous opportunity to get some huge steps ahead to lower the operational burden of security and to actually get far better security. There's also the risk that if you don't embrace it, that you start to fall behind, and our adversaries will be using it to create, you know, a growing sophistication and frequency of attacks. And so it really is important to embrace it.
Yeah, and people hate change, and that's kind of what's part of the, you know, crux of the problem here also is, you know, there's a unwillingness to accept the fact that, you know, this isn't some trend like, you know, zero trust or the human factor or what have you, some RSA induced marketing slogan, you know. I find that to be true with many a disorienting amount of many people that I talk to in this business. I just don't know how you can be in denial about this. I personally think, if OpenAI next week announced that they had achieved AGI and their, sentience is among us, it wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, I think I'm pretty sure they're right there. And so then what do we do, right? I mean, you have an opportunity then to completely refresh your product line and make it wholly self-determining. After you prove that obviously that all the mistakes or whatever you want to call hallucinations were manageable, what would you do?
Well, on our side, I mean, look, we have tried from the beginning to think about what we're doing as a productized service, if you will, meaning we're delivering a managed service, but we're trying to think about it and manage it as a product. And most services historically don't, right? They think of themselves really simply as a service.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge that has when you do that is that you don't think about what is common and how can you do things that are tailored by configuration versus customization. You end up with lots of snowflakes. And what ends up happening with most security services is they end up degrading at scale. They're really good when they're small. There's a few customers. And then all of a sudden, there's hundreds and hundreds, which is great because now you can learn from other customers and that benefits everyone. But it just degrades at scale because it just becomes so, you know, snowflakes all over the place and too much complexity that is inbred into the system. So we've always tried to think of this as a product. And a lot of the work that we've done has really been on the platforms and the technology to operationalize all these security tools and to capture expertise into these, right? As I said, we started with a group of, you know, a dozen or a couple dozen data scientists out of an acquisition we made of a company called Scuba a few years ago. Now, of course, the large language model revolution over the last year and a half has accelerated a component of that even far faster than we thought. But I think the way we're embracing it is we're trying to leverage the technology as much as we can, not losing sight of what problem we're ultimately solving for a customer. At some level, the customer doesn't care about whether this is AI or not. They really just care about outcomes. How quickly can you detect and respond, most importantly, respond to a security incident and how much operational burden does there end up being on me? We just happen to believe that the application of AI is what will enable us to actually make that outcome possible and to really accelerate that. If more and more of this becomes product and technology, so be it. There is still a place today for that tier three SOC. And again, as I was saying earlier, both to handle the kinds of cases that still require a human investigator in the loop and to continue to train and provide expertise into the AI models and to tune and ensure the quality of those models. If that becomes a smaller and smaller piece, so be it. Our eye is really on how do we deliver outcomes.
Right. Yeah, that all makes sense. Yeah. And I'd love to have you back. I'm looking at the clock here. I think we're near the end here. I'd love to have you back, Tom. It was very enjoyable. And maybe in 4 or 5 months, we'll see what's happened with OpenAI and companies and see what kind of an impact that might have had on Tinu and in your world generally. It's remarkable to your earlier point that we're sitting here only a year plus removed from general availability and this thing's flying by our heads at the speed of sound. So and we're trying to come to grips with it. It's truly amazing. And all my history, I've never seen, as you point out, anything close at all.
So it would be my absolute pleasure. I find it fascinating too. And again, as we've been talking here, it's not just the technology questions; it's the human questions, it's the governance questions, it's the policy and regulatory questions. There's so much of this that is so fascinating. So I continue to watch many of the different podcasts that you've been putting out in and around this topic, but it would be my absolute delight and pleasure to join you again.
All right, great. So until next time, I hope our audience enjoyed this as much as I did, and we'll look forward to talking with Tom again in a few months, hope you guys have a great day, and we'll talk to you soon. This is Steve King, your host, signing off.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Cybersecurity Insights. You can connect with us on LinkedIn or Facebook, or send us an email at social@cybered.io. For more information about the podcast, visit cybered.io/podcast. Until next week, stay safe and secure, and we'll see you on the next episode of Cybersecurity Insights.